I'm Bex, and welcome to the Week Junior Show. I'm joined by three of the team from the Week Junior, the magazine making sense of the world for 8 to 14-year-olds. Today, we've got editor Felicity.
Hello.
Writer Michael.
Hello.
And assistant editor of the Week Junior's monthly Science and Nature magazine, Kieran.
Hello.
This week, we'll be talking about a coronavirus vaccine, counting butterflies, and how a battle 1,000 years ago determined what we have for lunch today. Plus, we'll have a debate all about art. So, because of that, I thought I'd ask, who is everyone's favourite artist? Felicity.
Too many to choose from, but I'm going to go with the American artist Georgia O'Keeffe, who was making art in the 20th century. She did all sorts of beautiful paintings of skyscrapers and flowers and scenes of New Mexico. And she lived for almost 100 years. So she died at the age of 98. So quite an incredible life.
Wow, amazing. Michael, how about you?
Mine is the Dutch painter Vincent van Gogh. I used to live in the Netherlands when I was little, and he was very popular over there. And also, there's an episode of Doctor Who about him. So I feel any artist who is good enough to have an episode of Doctor Who made about them must be pretty good.
I know the episode. It is a really great episode. Kieran, how about you?
I've picked Ai Weiwei, who's a Chinese artist and activist, and he is known for using very traditional Chinese art forms and bringing them up to date and using them to make different political messages. So I think he's very cool.
Oh, wow. Three big choices. I found this really, really hard. I was between Salvador Dali and also Pablo Picasso, but I focused on Roy Lichtenstein. I thought, I love pop art and all of the big kind of colourful art that he made. So that's what I've gone for. But it was a really tough question this week. That was tricky, guys. Next up, what is your favourite fact from this week, Felicity?
I learned that between 2010 and 2015, vaccines prevented at least 10 million deaths around the world.
Wow, that is pretty massive. That's an amazing fact. Michael, how about you?
I learned that apparently some people say a tiger's urine smells like buttered popcorn.
I mean, I have a lot more questions to ask about that, but I feel like you're maybe not the man. Kieran, what's your fact?
I learned that if the sun was the size of a tennis ball, Earth would be the size of a grain of sand.
Absolutely tiny, then. Tiny.
Very, very small.
Wow, guys, knocking out the park with three great facts there today. They're the kind of facts I will go and tell my friends and family later on. Now, Michael, tell me, what is our real or rubbish story for this week?
Well, this is a story that I feel quite passionately about, Bex, because it's to do with chocolate digestives, which are my favourite type of biscuit. But apparently, I and many other people have been eating them the wrong way around. And McVitie's, who make chocolate digestives, are about to do something about this. So if you imagine a packet of digestive biscuits, which I do regularly, then you'll know that if you open it from the top or from the end closest to the letter D in the word digestives, then you'll see the chocolate side of the biscuit first. So most people think that's the top of the biscuit. There's half chocolate, half plain, and they eat it with the chocolate side facing upwards. However, McVitie's, who make the biscuits, have said that actually the chocolate side is meant to be at the bottom and you eat the plain side at the top. So they've said they're going to change the packaging and how the biscuits are put in the packaging to make sure that people eat them the right way around.
Now, here's the thing. Weirdly, I was doing some research this week about digestive biscuits. bizarrely. I found out they were invented in like the 1830s in Scotland, and they were meant to kind of help your digestion, hence digestive biscuits, I suppose. But nobody in my research, nobody mentioned which way around the chocolate goes, and that's why I'm a bit stumped, because I feel like I would have heard about it if I'd done some research. And I do eat them the same way around as you, Michael. I eat them with the biscuit at the bottom, the chocolate on the top, but that's the wrong way, right? I'm meant to have it with the chocolate on the bottom.
It's meant to be with the chocolate on the bottom, yeah. So McVitie's have said that they're gonna change how they're packaged because too many people are eating them the wrong way.
Now, I feel like this could be just a great PR stunt from McVitie's. They're just like, you know what, let's just switch it. Next, I'll be saying, no, you have to eat it, you know, nibble it from the side. I don't know about this because I've been known to eat things the wrong way around before, so it wouldn't be out of the realms of possibility, to be honest. I'll have a think about that. I'm annoyed it didn't come up in my digestive research, if it is actually true. If you've not read your copy of the magazine yet, feel free to make your guess before the end of the show. We can find out the answer together. So we need to talk about our three favourite stories from this week. Felicity, what have you got for us?
My favourite story is our Big News One story. And this is all about an exciting breakthrough in the race to find a coronavirus vaccine. And the idea is hopefully if we had this vaccine, it would prevent people from getting the disease. And at the moment, there are lots and lots of different countries working on a vaccine for coronavirus all over the world. So 23 different vaccines are being developed. But one of them has happened in the UK, and that's at the University of Oxford. And the scientists there have reported some promising results of their human trials. So they've been testing out this new vaccine on more than 1,000 people at 5 different UK hospitals. And so far, so good. The trials show that the vaccine is safe and can train a person's immune system to fight against the disease, which is very exciting, very promising. However, scientists say more studies are needed. We don't know yet whether the vaccine actually stops people from getting infected with the disease in the first place and how long that protection might last for. So it's early days, but exciting nonetheless.
This is really great news, especially because obviously it's such a big deal right now. So what happens next? Do we know?
Well, it's more trials, really. So the scientists say that lots more studies are going to be needed. And that's sort of why it takes so long. I mean, obviously, it'd be great if we could click our fingers and we would just have a vaccine that was ready to go. But vaccines take a really, really long time because you've got to be absolutely sure that they work. And you've got to carry out all these trials and tests to make sure that it's ready. So currently at the moment, we don't know if it's going to work or when it would be ready by. So it's very much a case of keeping our fingers crossed.
Kieran, tell me, what have you learned about this week?
This is a fascinating story from our science and technology pages this week, and it's all about the history of British food and how a battle in 1066 changed forever the way that we eat and what we eat in the UK. So the battle in question was the Battle of Hastings in 1066, and that was a battle between the English king and the Normans who came from northern France. And it was the Normans who won the battle, and they successfully invaded England, and they brought with them a completely different way of eating. And we have now discovered that that was basically that they brought pork and chicken with them, and that became the most popular food of the day. Now, of course, it's quite difficult to work out how things like that change over time, because people might not have, you know, been writing down their menus and keeping that for us to find out what was on the menu. So scientists from two different universities, so Cardiff and Sheffield, decided that they would study the remains of 36 people who lived in the Oxford area between the 10th and 13th centuries. So that's immediately after the Norman invasion. And they looked at chemicals in these people's bones and teeth, and they were able to use that to work out what they had eaten. And they found that there was both a significant increase in the amount of meat that they ate, and also that there was a clear switch to pork. Before the conquest of the Normans, the most popular meats were beef, lamb and goat, and that changed to pork afterwards. And they also looked at the pottery that would have been used at the time, and they found traces of pork and chicken in that, so that was definitely what they were eating. But beyond that, they also found out that how people raised the animals for food changed. So pigs had a much better time after the invasion because they were kept on farms, so they got much better food themselves and were much healthier. Whereas before that, people would just sort of let them loose into the woods and it would be up to them to find their own food. So the Normans not only successfully invaded England, but they also successfully changed the way that we eat and what we eat.
This is awesome because, well, first of all, I eat quite a lot of chicken, so thank you to the Normans. But it is amazing because you mentioned goat. I guess foods were phased out in favour of, because we don't eat goat much anymore, foods were phased out in favour of what the Normans had suggested.
Absolutely. I mean, it's the classic thing of invaders bring with them their own culture. So if they enjoyed eating chicken and pork, then they would bring that with them. And gradually that sort of takes over. And of course, if they had a better way of rearing pigs than was previously going on, then it makes sense that that sort of took over and became the more common sort of farming.
And I guess we have them to thank for bacon sandwiches and sausages.
I think we could say that, yeah.
If only it was that big breakfast quiz, breakfast thing we had a few weeks ago where we had to debate how which was the best breakfast. Michael, how about you?
Well, this is an exciting activity that our listeners can get involved in, which is the Big Butterfly Count. It started on the 17th of July and is running until the 9th of August, and it's run every year by the organisation Butterfly Conservation. And what they're asking people to do up and down the country is to go for a walk outside and record which kinds of butterflies and moths that they can see. And the reason why they want people to do this is not only to help them better preserve and protect butterfly populations, but also to better understand what's going on in nature. Experts often say that counting butterflies is like taking the pulse or the heartbeat of nature, because butterflies are very sensitive to what's going on in their surrounding environments. They react very quickly to that. So changes in butterfly population numbers can be an indication of bigger changes that are going on in nature and in the environment. And a lot of people have said that butterfly species have been falling because of climate change, which is long-term changes in weather patterns, including rising temperatures. And so there's been many different conservation efforts that have gone on to help protect butterfly populations. But one thing that we can do to help in these efforts is to go outside for a walk, 15 minutes, go out in our garden and count what we can see and which types of species we can see. And if, like me, you're not an expert on what different types of butterflies look like, then Butterfly Conservation have put on their website an identification chart, which you can download to see what different species of butterfly look like, and then take that with you to see which types you can see when you're out and about for a walk. And you can go online and put your results on there and help them in their research to both look after butterflies and find out what's going on in nature as well. So with the nice weather we have at the moment, if you're out and about, have a look, see what butterflies you could see, and you could be helping with some very valuable research.
I had no idea butterflies were so important to finding out what is going on in wildlife right now.
Yeah, it turns out they're very, very important animals to chart, not just their own health and safety, but everything that's going on in the environment as well. So yeah, it's a very important piece of research for all of us, really.
Awesome stuff. Well, thank you very much, Michael. Now it's time to catch up on your summer reading challenge. Do you guys have a bit of an update for us?
Yes, so the entries have started to pour in for our Summer of Reading Challenge. We've spoken about it on the podcast before, but essentially we're challenging Readers of the Week Junior and listeners to this podcast to read three books this summer and then create a three-word review and rate them out of three stars as well. So to give you an idea of what some of those already taking part in the challenge have been up to, here are some of their audio clips reading out their reviews of their favourite books so far.
My name's Ianthi and I'm 9 years old. My first review is The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe by C.S. Lewis. Three words that describe this book is magical, exciting, engaging. I rated it 3 stars as it's a magical story about the different worlds being separated by a wardrobe. My second book review is Charlotte's Web by E.B. White. 3 words to describe this book is terrific, amusing, captivating. I rated it 2.25 stars. It's a captivating story about a pig not wanting to be slaughtered. Book 3, Murder Most Unladylike by Robin Stevens. 3 words that describe this book is action-packed, entertaining, brilliant. I rated it 2.5 stars. It's a series about mystery, crime, and problem solving.
My name is Emily and I'm 10, and I'm reviewing The Worst Thing About My Sister, which is by Jacqueline Wilson. I give it 2.5 stars, and it's interesting, funny, and excellent. And then for my second book, it's The Good Thieves, which is by Catherine Rundell, which I give 3 stars. It's spelled out, binding, magical and awesome. Book 3 is Who Let the Gods Out, which is by Maz Evans, and I've rated it 3 stars, and it's hilarious, ridiculous and wonderful.
And how can we get in touch, Kieran?
So if you want to get involved, you can find out all the information. You can see our list of 50 books that you might like to read this summer, and you can also enter the competition to win a book bundle worth more than £200. So to do that, just go to theweekjunior.co.uk/summer of reading.
now it's time for the big debate. This week, we're asking whether graffiti is art.
So on the 14th of July, the graffiti artist, who goes by the name of Banksy, uploaded a video to his Instagram account showing a new piece of his work on the London Underground. It was called If You Don't Mask, You Don't Get. And the message of his work was to encourage people to wear face masks on public transport. Now, Banksy is famous all over the world for his graffiti, but in this country, it's against the law. So graffiti is drawings and words spray painted and written in public places. But if you're caught doing it, you can be arrested or fined. And as a result, cleaners working for Transport for London immediately removed Banksy's work because they said it was against the company's rules on graffiti.
All right, I'm very interested in this one. So we're challenging Michael first. He's got to say why he thinks that graffiti is a form of art. Michael, do you have a timer nearby?
I do.
Excellent. You've got 1 minute. When you're ready, take it away.
Well, of course, graffiti can be art, because anything can be art. It's all about human creativity and expression. And graffiti can be just as imaginative, just as impressive as paintings or sculptures or any other piece of art. Art is about entertaining people, about educating people, about making them feel different emotions. And good pieces of graffiti can do all of those things and can have a huge impact on the public, just like Banksy, as Felicity was saying. Banksy is one of the world's biggest artists at the moment. And all around the world, graffiti has captured people's attention. People want to go and look at different pieces of graffiti. It's also more accessible than other types of art. You know, theoretically, anyone could do graffiti and make their surroundings look better in the process and express themselves. Banksy is quoted as saying that a city where graffiti is legal would be like a party where everyone is invited. So let's get this party started. Graffiti should be legal and recognized for the unique and beautiful art form that it is.
Oh, lovely work. Under a minute and well argued. But can Kieran argue better? That's what we're going to find out right now. Kieran, you're arguing why graffiti isn't a form of art. Do you have a timer nearby?
I do.
Excellent.
Also got a siren.
That's the debate alarm going off. Lovely. So when you're ready, take it away.
Graffiti is not legal. Making graffiti is against the law. And I think that's a really important starting point for this debate, because art should push the boundaries. It should make you think, and it should challenge your opinions on things, but it shouldn't involve breaking the law. Michael mentioned Banksy, and Banksy is a fantastic artist, but it's funny that he didn't raise the countless other graffiti artists across the UK who scrawl rude messages on walls. They make the place look worse, and they can sometimes upset people by vandalizing what are already fantastic pieces of artwork or sculptures or buildings. Art is something we should be able to choose to look at, and graffiti takes away that choice from people because it is in front of you whether you like it or not. And I can't help but think about the amount of money that gets spent on clearing up graffiti from public spaces. Imagine how much better it would be if that money could be spent on paying local artists to create actual artworks that people really want to see.
Oh, I didn't think you were going to make it, but you did. That was a minute. Felicity, what do you reckon?
I'm with Michael on this one. I think the whole point of art is that it's all about creativity and expression, and it's never been something that should fit inside, you know, the rules and laws of society. I think artists have always sort of broken out and done their own thing. But the only thing I would say, I do slightly agree with Kieran that I don't like rude messages, and I don't quite see how that's art. But I think, you know, the work that Banksy does, and when you see amazing like murals on walls, I think that is art, I'm afraid. So yeah, I'm with Michael on this one.
I have to say, I thought it'd be a lot easier to say yes or no on this one, because I do think I agree with Michael. I do see Kieran's point about, like, you know, kind of what is art and like graffiti and rude words, and like if you were to walk out right now and just see graffiti on your front door, how would you feel about it? But I think Michael just swings it for me. So let us know what you think by responding to the poll right now at theweekjunior.co.uk/poll, or email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk. with a video clip explaining which side of the debate you support and why. So last week we debated on the podcast whether a book could be judged by its cover. In our poll, wow, this was pretty good victory here. 25% of you said yes, but 75% said no. Here's what some of you had to say.
Here's a clip sent in by Vedant, age 7.
I think you can't judge a book by its cover, because what happens if the cover is not what the story's about?
Someone on PopGem wrote, yes, you can judge it because the book's front cover might clearly be a fantasy book, and maybe you don't like fantasy, no matter how good it is. Therefore, you can judge that book as something you won't like.
Another PopGem user wrote, you should not judge a book by its cover because the cover isn't always designed by the author. Someone else wrote, of course not. The real thing that counts is the story inside.
Somebody else added, yes, because when you're buying it, it is the cover what makes you pick it. And over on Apple Podcasts, someone wrote, I think you should judge a book by its cover, but if you like the art, read the first page of the book too.
All very good advice. So remember, get involved. This is your chance to hear your voice on the podcast. Grab a grown-up, record a video telling us what you think of this week's debate, and send it in to us at hello@theweekjunior.co.uk, and we could play it on next week's show. So before we go, I think we've got to have a little chat about this real or rubbish story. Michael, can you remind me about it again, please?
So this was the story that McVitie's, who make chocolate digestives, are changing up the packaging because people have been eating them the wrong way around, with the chocolate side on top when it should be the plain side on top.
Now, although I've no idea how they would really change the packaging, because I don't think it would make much difference, I feel like I know myself, I eat things the wrong way around all the time. And for that reason alone, I'm going to say this is probably true. I think this is McVitie's trying to educate the biscuit-eating nation. So I'm going to say real. I'm going to say real this week.
Drum roll, please. It's rubbish. But this is one of those ones where it's half rubbish, half real. So
I think you mean one of those ones where you've tricked me, Michael. That's what you mean.
So they're not changing the packaging. They're not going to do anything like that to try and make people eat them right around. However, it is true that McVitie's have said you should be eating them with the plain side on top. That is the right way around to eat them,
apparently. The packaging thing was weird because it was like, how do you change the packaging? Do you say, eat this side? I'm annoyed at that. But it does give me excuse to go and eat lots of digestive biscuits, I suppose. Well, thanks for tricking me, Michael, for that.
That really takes the biscuit.
Oh, no, Kieran.
All right, well, probably for the best. That is it for this week's The Week Junior Show. Goodbye to Felicity.
Goodbye.
Michael.
Goodbye.
And Kieran.
Goodbye.
Can hear you giggling away yourself. Drop us a comment on PopGem at The Week Junior or email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk. And don't forget to rate, review and subscribe wherever it is you get your podcasts. Bye!
If you want to get your hands on a copy of The Week Junior magazine, we're offering a 6-week free trial. To get yours, head over to dennismags.co.uk/theweekjunior and use the code PODCAST.